Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. How about that selection of beer they have? Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection anywhere. They'll have what you like. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. The bags are right there at the register. And yes, the pickle bar, the world famous pickle bar, led by the barrels of the dills, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. The Orioles last night beat the A's 7-2. A big reason why, Trey Mancini.
Way back in left field and watch her go. Goodbye home run. Last two at-bats, Trey Mancini drills it. That's number 20, a 3-for-3 night.
Orioles fans very fortunate to have the outstanding voice of Gary Thorne on their games, as last night the Orioles beat the A's 7-2 in our play-by-play call of the day. There's a book out entitled Cincinnati Red and Dodger Blue, the forgotten rivalry. Tom Van Riper is the author of the book, and very pleased to have Tom on the show with us today. Tom, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Sure, Steve. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So what was it that intrigued you about this rivalry, especially about these two teams from the 70s?
Well, it's funny. Growing up, I was a kid from Long Island. I was a big New York Mets fan as a young kid in that era. I was not particularly a fan, you know, of the Reds or the Dodgers of that time.
Big Bud Harrelson, Felix Mian guy.
Yeah, absolutely. My idol was Tom Seaver, but I loved Matlack and Harrelson and Mian and Cleon Jones and that whole group.
Yeah.
And, of course, that was basically the highlight of my childhood was when they knocked off the Reds in the 1973 National League playoffs.
But is that the one where Bud Harrelson took on Pete Rose at second?
Yeah. He became famous for the Rose-Harrelson fight in Game 3, which was really bizarre. And that kind of got most of the attention. But it kind of overshadowed, you know, some other things. The Reds just not hitting as great as they were at that time, just not hitting that Met pitching staff, and just kind of shows what can happen over five games. You just never know.
And then, of course, this all came out of after the Dodgers and the Reds went head-to-head. And was this a rivalry born out of – sometimes rivalries are born by location and long history. Others are born out of performance. Is this one that was born out of performance?
Oh, well, certainly. And I know to today's younger crowd, no one thinks of the Cincinnati Reds and the L.A. Dodgers as rivals, so to speak.
Right.
It doesn't have the geography. It doesn't have the long history like the Dodgers have with the Giants or like you have with the Red Sox, Yankees, you know. But divisional play in baseball only began in 1969 with the expansion that year. Prior to that, of course, it was just, you know, one slate of teams without any divisions. And when divisional play began in 1969, the Reds, even though it was kind of geographically wrong, the Reds were placed into the National League West along with the L.A. Dodgers. And within a couple of years, both teams became powers. The Dodgers had the great drafting of the late 60s, which really started to bear fruit in the early 70s. And the Reds were just getting going with their Big Red Machine era, which started really in 1970. So by about 72, you had both teams, really outstanding teams, in the same division, and at the same time, the other more traditional rivalries were a little bit dormant. You know, Yankees-Red Sox was not as big a deal then because the Baltimore Orioles in that era were dominating the American League East.
Right.
And so you had the Dodgers against the Reds as really kind of the primary show in baseball in terms of their regular season clashes. And, you know, my big memory, and the reason I think what compelled me to think about it was, since you didn't have ESPN or MLB Network or any of that stuff back then, the showcase events like the All-Star Game and the postseason were, got even much bigger ratings than they do now. Those national telecasts of those showcase events were really a big deal, where it seemed like the whole country was turning in. And when you turned on those events in those days, these were the guys you saw. You know, Steve Garvey and Ron Say and Pete Rose and Joe Morgan and Johnny Bench. There were some years where as many as 7 of the 9 guys in the National League starting lineup in the All-Star game were from these two teams. In the World Series, one or the other was in it, I believe, 7 years out of 9 from 1970 through 78. So these were really the definitive guys of the 70s. When you weren't following your own team day-to-day, like I was with the Mets and like lots of other people were doing around the country, you tuned into the national broadcast, and these were the guys you were seeing year after year. They were just a big force in baseball.
Yeah, I've said that many, many times on the show that for me growing up, it was the Saturday game of the week,
yeah,
the All-Star game, and then we finally got a chance to see the playoffs and the World Series. That's how we ended up seeing players from other teams. I want to start with the Dodgers. The third base coach for the Dodgers was Tommy Lasorda, because Walter Alston was still the manager then, I believe.
Right. And Lasorda took over in 77. Right?
Yeah. And Lasorda had been coaching at Albuquerque, which meant he was with, say, for a little bit, Russell, Davey Lopes, Steve Garvey. What kind of role did that play in their comfort level going to the majors that Tommy was there actually with them as a third base coach?
Yeah, you know, in speaking to some of these guys, they said there was that continuity with the way the Dodgers like to run their farm system. Lasorda was a big organizational man. He had been the Dodger third base coach for, I think, 3 years before he became the manager. But before that, and I think this was really even more instrumental, he was a manager in the Dodger system. He managed the Spokane Indians in 1970. Steve Garvey said we were probably the greatest minor league team of all time. They finished in first place by 26 games. Yeah. They rolled through the playoffs. They had Garvey and Bill Buckner and Tom Pachurik, if you remember some of these other names, Von Joshua, yeah. Yeah. Charlie Huff was on that team. They had something like 7 or 8 guys who made it up to the Dodgers a few years later, or even in some cases a year or two later. You can even go back a little bit before. Ron Say, I had the chance to interview him, and he told me that in addition to kind of the basic minor league structure, the Dodgers had this separate sort of fast-track camp in Mesa, Arizona, which was just a separate thing they did for several weeks that highlighted just kind of the premier prospects like Say and Garvey and some of the other guys. And Tommy Lasorda ran that for a while. So all these guys came up under Lasorda in the system, either as kind of a minor league coordinator running the fast track camp or managing the minor league teams. So, you had that continuity. I don't know exactly how popular Lasorda was with the other guys compared to Walter Alston.
Right.
Not that he was unpopular.
Right. I understand what you're saying, though.
You know, I'm not sure.
Alston was like grandpa.
Yeah, and it was an interesting contrast because Walter Alston was kind of that strong, silent type. He was a very quiet guy, commanded a lot of respect in sort of a quiet way, and that was his style. Lasorda, of course, 180 degrees different. He comes in 1977, and he's this bundle of energy, right? He courts the press. He bleeds Dodger blue, the whole thing. And, you know, each guy had his style, but I think you have to credit Lasorda with kind of injecting some new energy, renewed energy, I should say, into the Dodgers, because as the rivalry was going great for a couple of years in the early to mid-70s, the Reds kind of started to dominate for a couple of years at the end of Alston's tenure, 1975 and 76. They pretty much ran away with it, and then went on to win the World Series in both of those years. And when Lasorda came in 77 with this whole different style, the Dodgers came back and got to the World Series that year. So a lot of people do credit the transition to Lasorda with kind of, you know, giving some renewed energy into the Dodgers, and by extension kind of giving the rivalry another few years that it lived on kind of into the early 80s.
The Reds were, at this point, really starting to become that 75-76 dynasty that you talked about, because at this point now they've got Tony Perez, they've got Dave Concepcion, they've got Joe Morgan, they've got George Foster, Cesar Geronimo, Ken Griffey, Pete Rose. I mean, it's a pretty good group. And then they got Johnny Bench. But Johnny Bench had something happen to him in the offseason where he had, I think, he had a lung surgery before the season began, I believe. And in fact, the 72, I think, is the last time he ever hit 40 home runs. He was never quite the same since. How much of an effect did that have on him in the 73 season?
Yeah, I've heard Johnny Bench over the years say that in some interviews, that injury, he said, and of course, it's hard to pinpoint because Bench was still a great player for several more years.
No doubt.
But he said, He said, yeah, after 72, I physically never quite felt the same. I mean, this guy was the MVP of the league in both 70 and 72. In 72, you know, he hits 40 homers, drives at 125, plus he's throwing out everybody on the bases. He was just, he's pretty much Mr. All-American. And you're right, he said, you know, I never quite felt the same after that. I mean, the next year, you know, he hits 25 homers and drives at 100 and plays great defense, but yeah, he was not quite the dominant guy in Major League Baseball like he was for those two or three years at the beginning of the 70s.
Yeah. All right, I want to ask you about now when they actually get out and start playing. They get to September, and they have a couple really big series, including a defining moment on September 21st of that year. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I thought that I found that game, you know, kind of looking up all the head-to-head battles that year between LA and Cincinnati. This is in 1973, which was the first year. I'd say the rivalry kind of started in 72, although the Reds made their move pretty quickly and they pulled ahead by mid-season, and by the end of the year they won kind of comfortably. The Dodgers were still a younger, kind of up-and-coming team at the time, but by 73 the Dodgers really arrived to be, I would say, a legitimate co-power with the Reds. And the Dodgers, you know, had the lead by, at midseason, 11 games over the Reds. The Reds come storming back. They win three games in a row at Riverfront Stadium. They cut it down to 8 around midseason. Then they continue hot through the summer. By early September, the Reds have pulled ahead of the Dodgers with this phenomenal comeback. Finally, by late September, the Dodgers start to rebound a little bit. They're within 4.5 games, and they've got a three-game head-to-head series coming up at Dodger Stadium starting on that Friday night, September 21st. So the Reds have pulled into the lead at this point, but the Dodgers still have some chance as they get down to about the last 10 games. They really kind of need a sweep at home that weekend to really stay in it realistically. So on that Friday night, September 21st, you've got Jack Billingham for the Reds against Claude Osteen for the Dodgers. The Dodgers get an early run. They lead 1-0 into the ninth inning, and they're three outs away from winning this series opening game. They've got Don Sutton and Tommy John waiting to pitch the next two games, which is, you know, going to give them a decent chance. Right. And in the top of the ninth inning, George Foster, who at that time was a guy who had been up and down between Triple A and the big leagues over the previous couple of years, not yet the established George Foster, you know, who we would come to see a couple of years later. He comes up in the top of the ninth and drills one to left field, home run over the fence. Reds tie the game in the ninth. Bottom of the ninth, the Dodgers don't score. Then in the top of the tenth, Osteen, this is a sign of the times, by the way, Claude Osteen is still pitching to begin the tenth, right? The starter is still
right
in there.
Exactly. Yeah, this is a completely different time.
Yeah. So in the top of the tenth, he gives up, I believe, a bunt single to the first hitter. Walter Alston finally takes him out, brings in Charlie Huff, who at that time is a young relief pitcher, and he gives up a base hit and then gives up a three-run blast to Tony Perez. The Reds go ahead 4-1. They retire the side in the bottom of the 10th. So the Reds tie in the ninth, win it in the 10th, and that kind of drives the final dagger into the Dodgers' pennant hopes for 73. It was kind of epitomized this season. You know, the L.A. is kind of right there, hanging right with the Reds. They're just about as good, but they don't quite have enough. That was the fifth time that year, by the way, in 18 games, that the Reds spoiled a Dodger lead in the ninth inning in head-to-head play in that season. And that really turned out to be the difference as to why the Reds won the division.
It's interesting. Marty Brenneman, of course, has been the signature voice of the Reds for decades now. But the irony is, based, you know, when we get to this, is that he didn't start till the year after this in 74. Al Michaels was the radio voice of the Reds.
Yep.
Vin Scully was the radio voice of the Dodgers. So it even extended into the booth, the quality.
I know. That was another thing I sort of stumbled upon as I started to do this. I thought, look at how many historic people, really, some players and some, like you said, broadcasters, that really were, you know, huge people in American sports in the following years, that kind of have their roots in this rivalry. You had Al Michaels, a young Reds announcer. Vin Scully, of course, the Dodger announcer. Vin Scully was already pretty well known at this point, but even he wasn't really a national network guy until a couple of years after this. You know, you could count Al Campanis, the Dodger general manager, who became, you know, unfortunately kind of infamous for these, you know, racial remarks that he made in the 1980s on when he went on that famous Nightline segment with Ted Koppel. And regardless of whether people debate that, I mean, without getting into all that too much, I guess, regardless of whether you think Al Campanis said something racist or just committed a little bit of a verbal gaffe, his appearance that night did turn out to be a pretty big event, because it really did change the course of the conversation in terms of minority hiring in baseball and so forth. And then you look at the players, right? The first free agent in baseball was Andy Messersmith from those Dodger teams.
That's right.
You had Tommy John, the first Tommy John surgery guy.
Yep.
You know, and even some other trivia questions. You know, who gave up Henry Aaron's 715th home run?
Al Downing,
another Dodger pitcher.
Yeah.
You could extend it another trivia, you know, thing, even though it's really just a one-time thing. But, you know, Bill Buckner, who was a Dodger, probably made the most famous error and maybe the most famous play in the history of the World Series, which,
yeah,
unfortunately for him, because I don't think Boston losing the 86 World Series was his fault, but, you know, it still became a very, very famous play and a signature moment in baseball. So there are a lot of big things that trace back to these two teams.
Writing any book is exhausting, far more than people realize. What did you learn along the way that opened your eyes and even surprised you when you were doing your research?
That's a good question. I think what surprised me was a couple of things, probably about the Cincinnati Reds, because of course I knew generally, like most people do, that they were a great club and that they had a lot of success and that they drew very well. That they have even though it's a small market, Cincinnati is quite a passionate fan base and always has. I was a little surprised when I went through the attendance as to how much both the Dodgers and the Reds just dominated the rest of baseball at the gate. I wasn't that surprised about it with the Dodgers because that's the perfect storm. Not only an excellent team in those days, but, you know, it's L.A., big market, perfect weather, you know, no cold games in April.
Big ballpark.
Yeah. Cincinnati, though, I was not surprised to learn that they drew well, but the degree to which they were outdrawing other similar types of teams really surprised me, because in that era, you had other strong teams, and, you know, like the Reds, strong teams in medium or smaller markets. You had the Oakland A's dominating. You had the Baltimore Orioles in their division. You had the Pirates in their division, you know, winning 5 out of 6 NL East titles, right, from 70 to 75.
And not one of the three drew well.
No, the Pirates did okay. They were kind of league average, but Oakland was not drawing flies, even in those three straight World Series. I mean, they were barely drawing 1 million fans. One year they were under 1 million. You know, they were getting 12,000 a game.
Yeah.
The Orioles didn't draw very well either, and they had those powerful teams in the early to mid-70s. So the Reds are drawing, you know, over 2 million fans, which is a big number in that era.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, basically double what Oakland and Pittsburgh and Baltimore are drawing. That surprised me, that Cincinnati was that much better at the gate than those other teams that were kind of in similar circumstances. You know, very good teams playing in smaller markets. Just kind of underlies how strong and kind of passionate that baseball fan base is in Cincinnati.
Tom, an absolute pleasure. The book is entitled Cincinnati Red and Dodger Blue, Baseball's Greatest Forgotten Rivalry. Tom, thanks so much for the time today and a fascinating look back.
Oh, I appreciate it, Steve. I never get tired of talking about this.
Tom Van Riper, the book Cincinnati Red, Dodger Blue, Baseball's Forgotten Rivalry. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Attention Central Pennsylvania. Now is the time to check out Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 25 brand new Elantras starting at $17,496. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is discounting all new Sonatas, $3,978. Choose from 24 Sonatas starting at just $18,967. All new Hyundais come with America's best warranty, 10 years, 100,000 miles. Why would you buy another import for more money and not as good of a warranty when you can save thousands at Sunbury Motors Hyundai? If an SUV is on your list, Sunbury Motors has 18 Tucson's starting at $20,993. Attention Central Pennsylvania. Now is the time to see what you can get for your money at Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburyhyundai.com. Now is the time, and Sunbury Motors Hyundai is the place.
True refreshment can come in many forms, but it can only be found in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet in Sunbury. Along with their great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, they have lots of water, soda, fresh roasted peanuts, and an unbelievable variety of pickles at the Pickle Bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and your favorite snacks, too. Get true refreshment all in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet in Sunbury.
All right, I'm going to have my brother on today. I read the letter that the NFL sent Zeke Elliott, and when you look at it, it's very detailed as to what they looked into. Again, he can appeal, which is his right, and I expect him to appeal. But I do not, just in a personal opinion, I just do not envision them reducing this at all. I think the way they've, the way the league fouled up the Ray Rice situation and the Josh Brown situation, I think image-wise, they probably feel they cannot afford to do anything. So I think six games, he's going to be out the six games even after appeal. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in beautiful downtown Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews. Best selection of beer anywhere. Without a doubt. To quote my broadcast partner, Jack Ham. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar is indeed second to none. As Jim said in an earlier email to the show, love the barrels, love the dills. It's a good listener. Well, we actually had to do something here in the Sunbury Motors studio earlier today for the Penn State football TV show. And first time that the crew had ever been in here. And they saw the picture of my beloved brother and me. Standing outside of Beaver Stadium when he was six and I was seven. And they got a big kick out of that. Kevin, welcome.
Hello?
Hello there. I don't think you heard me, so.
Yeah, I heard you did the picture. I got a picture of that, too.
Yeah.
That is a cool picture. Who'd have thunk it, huh?
Well, you know what they said to me, what they would like to do? What? They'd like to pick the same spot and recreate it. I said,
really?
I said, I'd be game for that.
I'm all in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Name the weekend and we'll do it.
Yeah. So I
said, wow,
yeah,
like that.
We would do that. I mean, you know, it's... Let's see,
pull our cuffs up and everything like that.
That's right, like we did in the picture.
Yeah.
That would be 1960? I think it was like 1965.
I don't know.
I think that's what it was. It was
52
years ago.
But we stayed at Uncle Phil's house, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And I peed the bed, remember?
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember, like, oh, boy, am I in trouble now. And
but
then we
they
took
looked
the
at that. Oh, yeah. Well, that's right. And, well, and they looked at that, the people that were in here today, because they'd never seen it.
Yeah.
They said, oh, my goodness, this is a slice of gold. I said, wow.
I said,
my brother and I enjoy, you know, liked it, but I mean, we never really thought of it in those terms.
No. Remember when we were sitting in the stands? It was a blue-white game, I think.
And yeah, it was.
We were sitting in the stands, but we were sitting down really low, and these three guys come walking through, like, onto the field, And we're just staring at them like, those are the largest human beings I've ever seen in my life. And one of them was John Cappelletti.
Yes.
Remember that?
Because his brother Mike was playing in the blue-white game.
Really? Is that why he was out? I'll never forget John Cappelletti walking in, and I was just in awe. I was like, oh, my God, what a huge guy.
Did you ever hear my John Cappelletti story from like 3 years ago?
No.
All right. They had done a top 50 Big Ten athletes of all time, and John Cappelletti was 16th. And I'm in the documentary several times talking about him. And it turned out he had tickets to a game. And he was in front of Jack and me after Jack and I had just finished doing the pregame show, and we were making our way to the booth. You know how we have to do that.
Yeah.
And so we have press passes, and so we slide to the press pass side, and John Cappelletti has tickets. So Truman takes the ticket and he scans it. Nothing. Scans it again. Nothing. Tries the third time. So John gives him another ticket. Truman scans it, nothing. I finally looked over, I said, Truman, we've had one Heisman Trophy winner ever. Let him in.
If you let Kevin Jones in, you got to let John Cappelletti in. That's the way I look at it.
And John looks over and goes, thanks, Steve.
Wow. So, that guy, he's one athlete who's bigger than life to me. You know, I don't get all enamored by a whole lot of things, but he was fun to watch, and he's a wonderful human being. And part of us growing up when we saw him walk on the field, and we were, like, standing right next to him, and we were just like, oh, my God. It's John Cappelletti, That was cool. We had
That's
fun.
One of those. Oh, we had. You and I always had fun.
We always
had fun. No doubt about that. That's what I was telling them today. I was telling the TV guys. I said, you guys don't know what a cool guy my brother is. They're like, yeah. I said, oh yeah.
Well, we got to do that picture. I am all in. I think that is the coolest thing in the world. So we've been looking at games to go to.
Oh, good.
We're coming out for sure, especially after today. But you wouldn't believe it. I just do it quick. I had two guys quit on me in a month, right? They quit. They gave me their notice. One guy leaves. He's been gone a month. The other guy, today was his last day. You can't make this stuff up, okay? Yeah. The other guy comes walking through the door, the first guy who quit, can I have my job back? I said, all right. It can't end to be the way it was, so we have that discussion. The other guy comes in while that guy's here, and the other guy leaves. I say, okay, you can start Monday. Because this guy's leaving. I got to have three people here. So this is kind of works out okay. Because outside of that, me and Claire don't get a vacation at all. Only two of us here, I'll be working 7 days a week, and I don't feel like doing that anymore.
So, good for you.
Yeah, so I said, all right, we'll work this out. The other guy, it's his last day. He's going to Pratt & Whitney, and he leaves. I send him home. I said, here, you can leave now, but he's got this worried look on his face because the other guy was here. And I said, well, you're going to Pratt & Whitney. That's a good deal for you. You know, good luck, handshakes, all that. He calls me an hour later. I didn't get the job. Can I have my job back? I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, you all wanted to walk out on me. Now you're all begging to come back. You know, it's not greener on the other side.
Yeah.
And so I had to tell the second guy, no, I'm sorry your timing's so bad, but, what do you want me to do? You were willing to leave. So His problem is he's a convicted felon, and they're holding up his hiring because of it. And I don't think that's very fair, but that's what they're doing. And now he went from having a good job to having no job. And because he quit, he can't collect. So, anyway, let's get on to sports. I was having a mental meltdown, but my wife came over and knocked me off a cliff.
It's never easy.
No.
It's never easy.
No.
That's why somebody asked me, how much does he enjoy the show? And I said, I said, great therapy for him.
It's the best part of the week. The rest sucks. No, I love my wife. So my wife.
No, she's great. I'm talking about the job.
I'm talking about the job. I just want to make candle holders. This is what I want to do. I want to dump this place, and then we got a nice garage or add on to the garage, and I'll take the machines I need to make my candle holders. And we'll make candle holders in the wintertime. And then in the spring, summer, and fall, we'll sell them. Go fair to fair to fair and sell them and just be like little gypsies flying around. That's all I want to do. Everything else is... I'm serious. I love making the candles.
I know you're serious.
Fun, you know?
And besides her, does anybody know you better than I do?
No.
No. So, believe me, I know you're serious.
No, I'm serious. I would be more than happy to just do that and keep life simple and sit on a mountain and watch everybody kill each other. It's a weird world. The best thing about living next to the building is watching the traffic report and say, okay, and walk across the field to work.
Right. Believe me, it's a weird world, and it's a weird world in a personal way now. So,
I know. I'll say it on the air. Is she okay?
She's fine. Okay. For those who don't know, when my daughter got married in June, she married an outstanding young man in the Air Force. He is stationed at Anderson Air Force Base in Guam. That's where Megan is right now. She's in Guam. Father and daughter are going to have a conversation tonight in the middle innings of the game. I just want to talk to her. Just want to make sure, everything's all right for her. And I'm going to talk to her tonight.
The family's home.
Well, I've got to talk to her about that, see what the situation is and what they're being told. But I also have to time it out right because it's 14 hours ahead. So if I were to call her now, it's 6:48 in the morning Saturday there. So I can't call her yet.
Guam, I said to Claire, Guam? And she goes, yeah. I said, that's where Megan is. She says, oh, my God, that's right. I said, yeah.
You should have seen the look on Jack Ham's face yesterday or 2 days ago when I told him. I said, remember where Megan is? He goes, wait a minute. He looks like and Jack got like ashen. He was like, my goodness. I said, yeah, she's in Guam. So for all of you listening to the news, listen on. In my household, it's very personal.
I'm going to be real bold and say something political. Mow that freaking country down and make it a parking lot.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but my niece is there, and you're threatening my family, so I don't really care about anybody in North Korea. You want to threaten this country? I'm going to tell you right now, if Ronald Reagan was president, they wouldn't be threatening the country. They wouldn't be doing anything. Omar Gaddafi's still in hiding, He was so afraid of Ronald Reagan. You don't mess with the United States, period. And you don't threaten the United States and get away with it. And I liked it when the president came out and said, watch out, here it comes. Well, it better come, because if they make one more threat, let them have it. Let them have it and let their country have a little pissy fit about it. If we have all the technology we say we do, we should be able to handle any missile they fire off, handle it before it even reaches the cloud. So let them know. You want to screw around, you're messing with something you don't want to mess with.
Well, I'll talk to her.
I'm all done being political.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to her tonight. So I'm going to talk to her about 8 o'clock tonight, because if I talk to her at 8 o'clock tonight, it'll be 10 in the morning there. So it's easier. So, well, thank goodness for FaceTime. Okay. I'll say this. Thank goodness for FaceTime. I'll tell you. that does make a big difference. But, again, they're there. They've got a better handle on it than we do. So that's why I want to hear what they say. So. All right. Hey, Zeke Elliott gets suspended for 6 games. Kev, I don't see them changing this. I think that because they botched up the Josh Brown thing with the Giants and they botched up Ray Rice, I don't think they're going to change. He can appeal all he wants. I don't think they're going to change it.
Now, what exactly did he do again? I heard about it.
They're saying domestic violence when he was in Columbus.
Is this the second time? Or is this the only time?
I think there's a claim of multiple incidents, I believe.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. I'd say 6 games isn't enough. He should sit a year out. You never lay hands on a woman. I don't care what your problem is. You walk away.
No, you have
period.
To walk away.
There is no halfway. I don't care if she hit you. You walk away. You be
walk
a man
away.
And walk away. A man walks away. A wimp hits her back. And
yes.
Walk away, you know. Not going to accomplish anything.
Now, I haven't read enough about it to know how it played out and so forth, but I know the Columbus police investigated. And plus, now, it did not figure in, according to what they're saying, but he had a few other incidents in Dallas. For example, like going 100 miles an hour when he was in Frisco and things like that. A bar incident with somebody else.
Well, it's happening more and more with these professional athletes, and it's a lot of what goes on in today's society. A lot of these younger people feel entitled to things all of a sudden. I'm entitled to be the way I am. No, you're not, you know.
No,
you live in the society, and you have to act accordingly, and if you don't, you're out, period. Now we'll give you a year, and you can come back after you had a year to think about it, that you're not better, bigger and better than everybody else. You're a human being like everybody else, and you have to act that way. You've been given a gift that very few of us have, that you can play on a level and make a lot of money to play. And you want to abuse that gift? That's your problem. And you own it. So.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting way too political today.
Well, we do have to take our last break here anyway, so I'm glad everything at the job settled down.
Everything's fine. Everything's great
We're 3 weeks from today. We do our, we do our first college picks.
That'll be my 1 year anniversary.
Yeah. Being on the show.
1 year.
Yeah.
Flew by. It was fun. So.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Fun. Okay.
You're a blast. Thanks, Kev.
So are you. Tell Megan I said hi and let me know if she's all right.
Yep,
I will.
All right. Yep, I'll talk to her tonight. All right.
Okay. Bye.
We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Brewers Outlet. Mets and Phillies coming up tonight. Boy, the Mets did a job last night. 6:30 the airtime this evening. Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson on your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK. Jordan Matthews dealt by the Eagles today. He ends up going to the Buffalo Bills. And they got Ron Dansby out of it, a defensive back. I'm not a big fan. Not a big fan of it, but that's the comfort level guy that I think was so important last year for Carson Wentz in his development. But they dealt him. Okay. So, that's what you got to deal with. For the Eagles, I think for fans, that's a curious move. I mean, a guy like Matthews is not, you know, he's just a rock solid, really, I mean, just good NFL player. I mean, he's not a star. He's a good NFL player. But, and you need good NFL players, and you need rock solid pros, which he is, to be an important part of what you're doing. So they've got that in him, but they traded him away. I know the league is always looking for dynamic, but sometimes rock solid wins a lot of games for you. So. All right. Next week, we'll talk more Penn State football. They got their first scrimmage, by the way, coming up this weekend. It's a next step forward for them. So far it's been a really good camp, and just got to keep it going. I mean, camp's so long now. I mean, this is the end of the second week of camp. It's the end of the second week. I still got three more weeks to go before the first game. That's a long camp. I just get a sense the NCAA is going to make a couple of adjustments to the calendar so it's not as long next year. Yeah. Jack Ham and I had long, productive conversations about what we've been seeing out there. And let me tell you what we're seeing very quickly, and that is we're seeing a highly competitive third team out there. You're like, well, what are you talking about the third team for? That tells you about the depth they now have. When you have, see, it used to be that when we would go to practice, okay, let's go back 10 years. First thing Jack would say to me would be, oh, check out the third team middle linebacker. Wow, he can play. And we both knew that third team middle linebacker was not going to play that year. He was probably going to play a little bit the next year and a lot the year after. Well, now we go out there, and the two of us are looking at the thirds and the fourths, and we're seeing talent all over the place that can play. I mean, let's face it, a guy like Corey Bowles or Fred Hansard, great prospects, in all likelihood, just because of the depth of the position, there's a pretty good chance they're probably not going to play unless something dramatic happens. What a luxury. It's like Shane Simmons never played last year. Shane Simmons, a great talent. Shane never played last year. He's still got 4 years of eligibility remaining. See, that's what we're seeing. When you look at the third and fourth teams and you're impressed, that tells you how good you think your first and second teams are. It's a tough schedule,